Now to that remarkable fall from grace and regal favour. The man we have always known as Prince Andrew will now go by the name of a commoner. Yes, that word is still used in Britain. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. The Queen's second son will also be evicted from his residence on the grounds of Windsor Castle, Royal Lodge, and move into a private house owned by King Charles. It's all because of his relationship with the deceased convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, and allegations which he denies that he raped Virginia Giuffre, who died by suicide in Australia early this year. There was one person we wanted to talk to about this. It's Emily Maitlis, the presenter of the Popular News Agents podcast, and the former BBC presenter whose famous interview with Prince Andrew in 2019 contributed to his fall. Emily Maitlis, thanks for joining us on the programme.
Pleasure to be with you, Nick. Hi.
Emily, more than 24 hours on, this still has something of a wow factor journalistically, but I wonder what your reaction was when you read that terse statement from Buckingham Palace that Prince Andrew will now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor.
You call it a terse statement. I think it was a mic drop moment. I genuinely do. And yes, we've all been on this journey for a long time. Some of us have been closely watching what was going to happen to the prince since 2019 when I did that interview. But more importantly, we've all been on the journey of Virginia Giuffre, and she has been calling for this for more than a decade, and she is at the centre of this, and it is her voice that is being heard today. And I think it is the moment in that statement, the very last sentence, when you hear the King and Queen talk about victims of trafficking. And that is quite extraordinary. There is no explicit mention of Virginia Giuffre, but she is clearly in their thoughts. There is no explicit mention of Epstein, but he is clearly in their thoughts. And it is reaching out across the heads of the perpetrators to say, you know what, we are going to listen to the victims here. And I think that is a landmark moment.
Yeah, it's worth reading out the end sentence of that statement. Their Majesties wish to make clear that their thoughts and utmost sympathies have been and will remain with the victims and survivors of any and all forms of abuse.
Yeah. It's an extraordinary form of words, that, because what are they saying? Are they saying that Prince Andrew is guilty? No, they're not. He's always denied that he ever met Virginia Giuffre. So they are not condemning him through guilt, but they have to do something far smarter. They have to say, we have been put in a position where young women have come forward and they have told us in no uncertain terms what a life of hell that they have been forced to live through Epstein and his friends. And it is about time that we heard them. And so I think they've done something quite special with that formulation of words, which is not to impugn that Andrew is necessarily a criminal, but that these victims have to be listened to. And in fact, I was talking to somebody very close to the King last night, and I said, just help me understand what that statement means. Are they accepting his guilt? Do they think he's guilty? What does this do to all the denials? And the response that came back was this: they think he's an entitled, overly privileged man out of step with the modern world. Is he an absolute criminal? Probably not. They'll never know what involvement he had. But they have made a choice that his judgment was bad enough for them to have to take this absolutely unprecedented move.
What's been interesting over the past 24 hours, Emily, is that friends of the King, well-known friends of the King, have been speaking out and being absolutely damning in their character assessment of Prince Andrew, using words like arrogant. I mean, presumably, the friends of the King would not be saying those sort of things unless it came with the imprimatur of the King.
I think the King has had nerves of steel on this one. And I was told, contrary to many of the newspaper reports in the last 24 hours, that there was actually extremely strong pushback from Andrew originally when this whole issue was raised, that Andrew was trying to find every reason he could to resist this. And the King pushed forward because he realised, or he sensed, that there was somewhere in this whole scandal an existential threat to the monarchy. And it was that he impressed upon his brother. And that once you have said it in those terms, and obviously I won't be able to tell you verbatim the words that were used, but the ones that were repeated to me was, you'll topple us all. You know, that was said, you'll topple us all. Would your mother really want to see you putting at risk the whole establishment? And if that was somehow conveyed to Andrew, that was the moment at which the penny dropped, the message sunk in. In other words, the king was steely on this and he had backbone and he knew what he wanted to do. But he had to make Andrew see just how important it was.
It's extraordinary to hear you say those things. And it has a historical echo, doesn't it, with what happened in 1936. King Edward VIII abdicated because of his love for the American divorcee, Wallace Simpson. Another moment that rocked the monarchy. You're putting it almost in that category as a kind of historical moment on the timeline of the British monarchy.
It's funny, isn't it, that we reach for that as a comparison. Mm. You know, one was a young man falling in love, right?
Very, very different circumstances.
Falling in love with a divorcee. I mean, can you imagine there being a scandal surrounding that in this day and age? And yet that is the parallel we reach for, when actually what we're talking about is a member of the royal family, and yes, he denies all the allegations, but he has been accused of having sex on three occasions with a trafficked woman. And that trafficked woman was part of a global paedophile ring. And I guess the problem that we should all have with this story is that it doesn't start or end with Prince Andrew, and it certainly doesn't start or end with his titles or with Royal Lodge or with Sandringham or wherever he decides to go and live next. It ends with how many other people are out there who have not been held accountable, who have been friends with Jeffrey Epstein, who have been part of his crimes, who have not been pursued. And there are young women who have gone to the authorities with names, they have talked to the FBI, they've talked to the police, and nothing has been done. And so this is a remarkable moment that our head of state, the king, has gone further than anyone else in the world right now. And there is an irony, I think, Nick, which is that he's kind of landed something pretty uncomfortable on Donald Trump's plate as well. He said, you know, over to you. I thought you were going to release the Epstein files. I thought you were going to get to the bottom of all the trials that never happened, that were just vanished away because it was sort of easier to make this stuff go away. It is over to Trump now. It is over to other heads of government or heads of state who know that they have had citizens who've been involved in that same paedophile ring that Epstein was part of, and have never been pursued. So it is much bigger, genuinely, than a question about one man, one title, one royal residence. It is about whether we want to get to the bottom of young women who've tried to tell their stories, who've been silenced for years and years, and whether we have the appetite to actually bring entitled men, powerful men, to heel when we know we should.
On Saturday Extra, I'm talking to Emily Maitlis, the journalist who did that famous interview with Prince Andrew in 2019. Emily, just the events of the past few weeks, we've seen more revelations come out, emails he exchanged with Jeffrey Epstein, this posthumous memoir from his alleged victim, Virginia Giuffre. Give us a sense of the mood in Britain these past few weeks as the scandal has got deeper and deeper.
I think it began with the email that you reference, an email that emerged in our tabloid press that was sent by Andrew to Jeffrey Epstein in February of 2011. And just to put that in context, it is 2 months after he had told me he'd broken off his friendship, his relationship with Epstein for good. And in the interview, if I take you back to the 2019 Newsnight interview, he explained at great length to me how he had not wanted to call Epstein after he was convicted of paedophilia. He'd wanted to go and visit him. And he'd wanted, his phrase, to do the honourable thing. He thought that a phone call was the chicken's way of doing things. And so he'd gone to stay with him in this Manhattan townhouse, and he'd stayed for 4 days. 4 or 5 days, I think. And I asked him in that interview why he found it so imperative to stay with a convicted paedophile in his own house, attending parties every single night in order to break off a friendship. And he said, well, I thought it was the honourable thing to do. If anything, you know, my problem was that I was too honourable. So this was how we'd left the interview, that the friendship had been broken off on that walk in Central Park with Epstein. We learnt last month that he had carried on the friendship, and not just carried on the friendship, but had written emails of a tenor that I think really shocked people. You'll remember the contents of that email where he said, "We're both in this together, let's play some more soon."
Yeah.
I don't know what that meant, but I think you have to really hold your breath to think you're going to say those words to a convicted paedophile. And so what emerged from that was certainly a disregard for the truth. He hadn't broken off that friendship with Epstein. It had continued. And then the memoir came out. And the stories that Amy Wallace, through Virginia Giuffre's own voice, tells are horrific, frankly, Nick. They are. Mm. I know it's early morning in Australia. I'm not going to go into all
sure.
the details.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure
but
that your listeners will read them for themselves. But they are horrific. And it is a story of... I mean, the funny thing is, it's a story. She wants it to be a story of redemption. She wants it to be a story of how she came through the pain and she fought and she survived and she took the fight on for her own kids, for her own daughter. And that's how the book should end, but it doesn't. It ends with her having taken her own life earlier this year. And so when you put it in that context, you see the pain that she has gone through just to break the silence, to tell the story of what happened. And Prince Andrew is actually a very small part of that. You know, he is a significant part, and she reiterates her accusations that she had sex with him not once but three times, three different locations in Epstein's properties. But really it's about the struggle that women had not being believed, and how Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell as well were so complicit in the paedophile ring that they ran. And I think that did change the mood. I mean, I think, I'm not saying that everyone has read the book in this country, but I think people are aware of it, and I think people are disgusted, and I think people have stopped what had sort of followed Virginia Giuffre around for so long, which was like, well, really? Did she? You know, was she really? Did she really? And I read the book about 2 weeks ago before it was published. And actually, at the very end of the book, there is a moment that made me catch my breath, because she describes sitting down to watch the Amazon Prime drama that I co-produced that is about the Andrew interview. And there is a scene where she recounts, you know, what it's like to have to go over the facts, tell your story again, face people down, you know, try and prove yourself that you're not lying, that you're not doing it for money, that you're not inventing stuff. And I read the book, and I read Virginia Giuffre's own words saying that was the moment in the drama that actually, you know, made a punch the air, that somebody understood what it is like to have to keep repeating and repeating your story. It wears you down. You know, it's the endless, endless explaining. And I think the penny has dropped in Britain a bit, that this had been going on for too long. You know, the interview was six long years ago, and yes, titles had gone, some things had changed, you know, military patronages had gone, charity patronages had gone, but it just wasn't enough. It wasn't something that felt decisive enough to say, we're putting the victims first.
Emily, I wonder how you look on that interview now and the things that the then Prince Andrew told you.
Well, we know that he didn't tell the truth about certain things. I mean, that has become clear from the emails. We know that he carried on the friendship longer than he said that to me. And I think the trouble is, Nick, that once you see the chinks in one part of the argument, it makes you go back and reflect upon the whole thing. And I did that. I sat down and rewatched the interview 6 years after I did it. I very, very rarely watched the whole thing through, but I did 2 weeks ago when that email first came out, because I just wanted to see for myself how I felt about his words in the cold light of what we know now. And yeah, it makes you question everything again.
Emily Maitlis, thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Emily Maitlis, the presenter of the Newsagents podcast and the former BBC presenter whose famous interview with the now former Prince Andrew back in 2019 became such a milestone moment in the modern day history of the royal family. And one of the remarkable things about that interview was that when the cameras stopped rolling, he told Emily he thought it had gone really, really well.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.